Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. It is a Sunday afternoon. I am getting ready to watch the Rams take on my wife's Saints. My dad's Rams take on my wife's Saints. That'll make for a fun conversation at some point over the next couple days. But I figured I would knock this out. The Lakers don't play today. We are still awaiting information on Lonzo Ball's ankle. They, I would imagine, arrived back in L.A. late last night. They're probably running an MRI on him today. So I will act as if we are going to find out Lonzo is going to miss. It looked like a month or, you know, based on how far his ankle went, not being able to put any weight on it. We'll watch. I'm gonna treat it as if he's gonna be out for a month, and I'll answer questions accordingly. Last night was a tough loss, but I was trying to find a way to put this on Twitter. It's probably a good sign that you're disappointed you lost to the Houston Rockets in Houston, right? Like, that means you have expectations for the team that go beyond, hey, just compete. And I think it's a good thing that we're starting to build expectations for the team, even despite not having LeBron, though I think we'll probably get some pretty good news about him this week sometime. So that's my spiel on the game. Watching the Houston Rockets has to suck. Like, it makes sense that some of the worst people on Twitter are Houston Rockets fans. I'll just put it that way. I don't know, man. They shot 16 free throws in overtime. I thought that was a really poorly officiated game on both sides, really. Like, here's the thing. You have right now, and I'm biased because I have paid the most attention to this stretch of NBA history, but you are watching the league at its, I think, absolute peak right now. I don't think the league has ever been better than it is right now, just in terms of talent and talent dispersal and caliber of teams that are out there. This league is an incredible place, and yet the referees far too often this season have been the story. I wish that they would call it less tight. They instituted that rule, the freedom of movement rule, this season, and I think it's given them way too much power over games. Off-ball fouls, unless it's blatant, just don't call it. You don't need to call that. And if as soon as you call one of them, you wind up having to call all of them, and it just bungles up the game. And, you know, with a team like Houston, you watch freaking I'm blanking on his name. I think it's PJ Tucker. I think it is. I forget. But you watch him play defense out there, and he's always holding, right? And it reminds me of the Seattle Seahawks back in the day, during the Legion of Boom era, where they basically said, like, we're going to foul on every single play and force referees to have to call it. And what winds up happening is referees let one go, and then they start saying, well, if we let that one go, we got to let the other one go. And you're allowed to play more physical than your opponent just because they're going to call the game differently based on your aggression. And you watch him play, and it's the same kind of thing. He should have fouled out in the first quarter. And then as soon as he switched over to Kuz, he got even more physical. And if you're going to call everything on the Lakers to the point where you're giving up 16 free throws to Houston on one end of the court, you got to maintain that same energy on the other end. And it's not me saying that I don't want the Lakers to shoot 16 free throws in overtime compared to the 16 free throws that Houston shot in overtime. I don't want that. It makes for terrible basketball. I want the players that make the league as special as it currently is right now to be able to decide these games on their own. Harden is an incredible player. It's why the way he plays pisses me off so much, because you're too good to try to game the system the way that you do. Same goes for Chris Paul. It's always been why I hate that guy so much. I hate watching him play because he's an incredible player. He's really, really good. He's also really, really annoying, and he tries to flop, and he does all these things, and I think you look at both guys' playoff resume, and it makes sense. That stuff doesn't work in the playoffs. My two cents. I'm going to get to your questions here. We have a ton of good ones. Thank you guys for sending them in. I'm going to answer one here, and then I'll come back and after the break, and I'll answer the rest of them. The first question I have here goes from G to the Abe. Hey, Anthony, I like the show. You, Harrison, and Pete have good chemistry and analysis. Thanks, man. Keep it up. Will do. My question, the Lakers' young core seems to have trouble with consistency, putting it mildly, all young cores do. I always find myself defending them from Twitter trolls. My actual question to you is, out of the Lakers' young core, who do you think is the hardest to defend from Twitter and public slander? Hope you see this. I think my initial reaction is Lonzo, because there's such a gap between engaged Lonzo and floating Lonzo, and whenever anybody sees floating Lonzo, people tend to think, well, that's Lonzo. And I'm of the opinion that engaged Lonzo is the one that we're going to see more over the course of his career. So I think he's the toughest just because of the gap there. Also, Brandon Ingram is tough because he just, the way that he plays is not, it doesn't fit the modern NBA. Too many mid-range pull-ups. Like, he played great in overtime because he was making shots. But if he misses a couple of those shots, they're just, again, they're mid-range contested pull-up jumpers that they worked for Michael Jordan. They worked for Kobe because they were incredible at those shots. They work for DeMar DeRozan because, again, he's incredible at those shots. Ingram is not incredible at those shots, and it makes it tough for him to be valuable on offense on a consistent basis. So I think he's the toughest because I don't quite believe in him. Whereas Lonzo Ball, I believe in him, and I know that the capability is there. The conversation around Lonzo is just really stupid, you know. And like, people are still talking about LaVar Ball this year. We haven't heard jack crap from him. Like, we maybe heard one thing from him, and it was like an aside to a Big Baller Brand reporter. Like, it wasn't. We barely heard from him. And if you're still bringing up LaVar Ball, you're kind of sort of telling on yourself. Let's go to the next question here. Actually, let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to answer your question. Somebody wants to know how I feel about the trade deadline. I think it has a lot to do with how Lonzo's injury is. So we'll get to that here in a bit. All right. So Derek T, 1992. Asks, with us now being over the halfway point of our season, do you see Rob and Magic making any trades? If so, what do you think would be the most likely trade we make? Or is Rob and Magic content with this being our playoff roster, assuming we get there? Thanks for answering my question. I love the show. Thanks, man. Somebody else asked a question later about the Orlando Magic and some of the players that they have. I'm just going to make a general point about the trade deadline, and I'll talk about if the Lakers make a trade, the kind that I think it would be and the type of player that they might target. First and foremost, as I said at the end of the last segment, I think it's going to have a lot to do with how injured Lonzo Ball is. If he's going to miss upwards of a couple months, look for the Lakers to make some kind of trade to bring in a point guard. I think they really believe in Rajon Rondo, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy this year. And if they lose Rondo again while Lonzo Ball is out, yes, you could technically make LeBron James your point guard, and you can kind of sort of tread water over that time. But I just think you guys know how I feel about point guards. I think you always need one on the court just because of the way that they think. LeBron thinks that way, and he's going to suffice, but he's not going to play 48 minutes a game. You don't want him. You don't want to force him to play 48 minutes a game. So look for some type of veteran point guard who's on an expiring deal that the Lakers could get for, say, a conditional second-round pick or in salary ballast going the other way. The other type of trade that I think that they might look into making is some kind of trade to improve their wing situation outside of LeBron and Kuzma and Ingram to a lesser extent. Their shooting guard situation, I thought it was going to be one of their strengths this year because Josh Hart, I thought, was going to take a step forward, and I thought KCP was solid last year, but they're too inconsistent, and considering what you need from your shooting guards, you need perimeter defense and you need three-point shooting, and they haven't been that enough this season. I think we need to see more from them. There's too many games where both of them are off. Like last night, for example, Hart was just kind of there, and KCP, I mean, he took a shot that ostensibly ended the game after giving up the overtime, the shot that forced it overtime. So you can't have games like that where a full one-fifth of your positions out there, 20% of the minutes that are being played in the game are just awful minutes. You can't have that. And so I would be interested to see what type of shooting guard that the Lakers might look at, or a small forward that they might be able to look at who can slide up to the shooting guard spot. We'll see how that looks. And the other thing too is, it's getting complicated now. Sam Amick made this point in an article about Carmelo Anthony, that at one point Zubats was the guy who was probably just going to be cast off in case the buyout market was such that the Lakers could really benefit from whoever hits it. And that's not going to be the case now, right? Zubats is arguably playing the best basketball, obviously, of his career, but of all the centers that the Lakers have right now. And you can't trade away that type of player unless you're getting a legitimately really good guy, preferably at his position. Hi there, Anthony Davis. But I think when what it kind of comes down to is, now you start looking at veterans. Would Magic Johnson, by waiving Lance Stephenson — he's admitting that he effed up this offseason by adding Lance Stephenson — by waiving Michael Beasley, he would be admitting a mistake on that front, though it's a lesser mistake than Lance was. I don't think Magic is the kind of guy who admits those kinds of mistakes very easily. Like, it was easy for him to admit that he bungled the offseason by signing Tyson Chandler, because it was so painfully obvious to everybody. I would imagine Magic would still try to make the point that Lance was a good addition because he's hit a couple shots. And he was, like, last night, in the first, like, three quarters or so, he was fine. He was good. Maybe even the first part of the fourth, he was fine. He was playing really well. It was the shots that he was making were a lot of those, no, oh, okay, cool, it went in type of shots. But when it turned, and it did, and it was the kind of thing that you knew it was going to turn at some point, he became useless out there. He's not a very good defender. He doesn't space the floor, and he doesn't rebound particularly well for his position either right now. And I just thought, when his game turned, I thought Brian Shaw, because Luke wasn't coaching, he got thrown out of the game. I thought Brian Shaw erred in going with Lance and not bringing Hart in earlier. That was, if you're to look for a mistake that cost the Lakers anything in overtime, I think that was the mistake. So, tough audition for Brian Shaw. Turns out he still isn't a very good head coach. Let's go one more question here, and I will rapid fire the last segment of the show. This is from Money Mike H. What's up, Anthony? It's no secret that Luke is on the hot seat, but why has nobody paid attention that Coach Pop's contract is up at the end of the season? P.S. Big fan of the show, but it makes my face cringe a little when you try to find the words to close out. Ending podcasts are tough. Like, find some... I've been doing this make somebody else's day kind of thing. But even then, like, I if you're cringing at home, trust me, I cringe when I say it too. I just think it's an important vibe to get out there in the atmosphere. But yeah, there's a reason I have the music cutting in at the end of the show, because it makes it easier to end it. But in terms of Pop, look, he's going to retire, or he's going to extend his time in San Antonio. I just don't ever see Popovich leaving that organization. Maybe. And here's where, again, the Lakers could really flex their endless funds and resources. Maybe the Lakers go out and go to Pop and they say, all right, we will pay you $20 million a year. You'll set the record for most money an NBA coach has ever made. And you can come over here. I know LeBron has incredible levels of respect for Greg Popovich, and I know Pop obviously feels the same way about LeBron. I'd have to double check. I'm just going off of this guy's question to whether or not Greg Popovich is actually a free agent at the end of the year. But that would be That would be quite the move. That'd be a baller move on the Lakers' part. All right, we're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, we will keep on getting to your questions. All right, so the trade that I mentioned earlier that somebody mentioned, I'll just give the details here. Lakers, this is from Ricky Spanish Jr. Lakers received Nick Vucevic, Terrence Ross. Orlando gets KCP, Lance Stevenson, JaVale McGee, and Brandon Ingram. Look, if the Lakers move Brandon Ingram, it wouldn't be for a rental at the end of the season, even two rentals in this case. They have Ingram earmarked for an Anthony Davis trade. I think that's as close to reporting as I'll get. It's kind of a non-starter when you include Brandon Ingram. But, you know, Terrence Ross is the type of player that the Lakers could maybe look at. You know, he's killed the Lakers so far this season, and that's one of the ways that Magic does his scouting is who plays well against the Lakers or whenever he's watching. And so Ross is somebody who I wouldn't be surprised the Lakers try to target. Let's go from K. Morrow. So I've been listening to the pod for a few months now. Love your work. Thanks, man. I wanted to know, what trades do you want the Lakers to make? Any specific trades you have in mind and what you would trade for them? Also, do you have any coaches in mind if Luke gets fired, or any changes he needs to make to his staff immediately to help the team if he remains coach? I've already talked about the trades and stuff. My opinion hasn't changed in the last 2 minutes. But in terms of coaches, if Luke gets fired, I think Monty Williams makes a ton of sense. He's really close with Anthony Davis, and I just think he's a very good coach. He's a very good dude. Like, he just seems like a really good guy. I think he would be at the top of my list of preferences for coach if Luke gets fired. My actual preference for the coaching situation is actually that they keep Luke and they see if he continues to grow. I wrote about this past week about how if you consider Luke part of the young core, you kind of puts him in a different picture. They hired him with the idea that he would continue to grow and develop as an NBA coach, much in the same way that a rookie or a young NBA player would grow and develop as an NBA coach. One of the things that I think they need to do, though, and actually it's kind of interesting the way that this mirrors itself, is like my problem with the way Luke handles the young guys is he's very hands-off, and he lets them be in charge of their own development, not just in terms of the amount that they develop, but also what they focus on in said development. The Lakers are kind of handling Luke in the same way, where they're very hands-off, and they say, all right, you're in charge of your staff, you're in charge of how you practice and this and that and the other. I would like to see the Lakers kind of step in with Luke and say, all right, you need to employ a shooting coach. You need to employ an offensive tactician that isn't like a frat buddy from college of yours. You need to, you know, if you're focused on defense, and Luke very much is, he's a very good defensive coach, you need to be able to have somebody who is just as capable on the offensive side of things so that at the very least you can learn that stuff too. So that's, I think, my preference there. But if that they don't go in that direction, I would like them to hire Monty Williams. All that said, it doesn't really matter who I like. This is why I'm nervous about Luke getting fired, is because I know who Magic prefers. He wants either Mark Jackson or he wants Jason Kidd. And like I've said on a couple shows ago, or a few shows ago, maybe last mailbag, players hated Jason Kidd. Hated him, according to some people I've spoken to. I wasn't particularly thrilled with Kidd either. How do you mess up Giannis? How does that happen? How do you get Giannis and your first round fodder? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So that's how I prefer that to go. Next question comes from DC Moore 1990. Does it hurt to see D'Lo balling out in Brooklyn and supposedly being a leader for a team that is overachieving? P.S. I'm aware we don't get LeBron without moving a young guy, and I usually don't miss with the what ifs because situation means so much. But Lonzo, D'Lo, Kuz, B.I., and Randall with a few options at center isn't a bad young core because the pieces fit. I look, you get LeBron, right? That team is a fun young team, and it would have been really fascinating to watch that team grow. I still don't think that's a championship caliber, or even a conference championship caliber young core. There's no bona fide superstar in that group yet. And usually at least one of those guys would have shown that they're an actual bona fide superstar. So it would have been a fun hypothetical to watch those guys grow, but that you sign LeBron. The what if you really want to go down the what if path, why, like, if the Lakers trade Brandon Ingram instead of D'Angelo Russell, and you have D'Angelo Russell, Lonzo Ball, Kuzma, because that, you know, the trade played a bit of a role in landing him, though the Lakers could have had him anyway. You'd have Josh Hart, and I think that team fits a little bit better than the one that the Lakers currently have. Unfortunately, D'Angelo Russell got Magic's best buddy fired, and that was just doomed from the start. So, yeah, that's the what if that if you offered Brooklyn right now Brandon Ingram for D'Angelo Russell, I don't think Brooklyn takes that trade. And that's kind of a bummer to find out. Next question comes from LA24825. So my mailbag question is, why do the Lakers always make an injury seem like it's just day-to-day? LeBron was day-to-day with his groin, and we're getting close to a month now. Lonzo last year with his knee changed seemingly every day. And I'm just curious as to why it always seems like the Lakers medical staff underestimates players' ETA. I mean, I talked about this on Thursday's show after Jen came on and talked about the groin injury as it was. I think it has something to do with an ability for teams to scout against the Lakers. Like, if you offer up a specific date, that means any team that you play after that date might be able to know a little bit better, a little bit more clearly what they're going up against on that specific date. I also think that, like, if you offer a hardline ETA and they go beyond that, fans get really, like, even more annoyed than they are currently with, like, the date, you know, the months of being day to day, because that's an actual goal that they failed to hit. So I think I'm just trying to explain it. I'm not excusing it. I would prefer they would just offer up a conservative time frame, and generally speaking, you can get away with saying anything is a 4 to 6 month or a 4 to 6 week injury. Like, that's what Jen and I always joke about is, you know, I'll ask her, all right, so-and-so sprained their ankle. How long do you think this is going to take? She'll take a look at the sprain, and she'll say, oh, yeah, it's a 4 to 6 weeker. How long do you think it's going to take for a groin injury? 4 to 6 weeks. And that's generally speaking what the Lakers could get away with there. And it kind of annoys me that they don't. So hope they answered your question. Next question. Another question about trades at the deadline. This one asks if I think they'll make one. Like I said earlier, though, I think it has everything to do with how long Lonzo is out and where they are in the playoff picture. Like, I think we're about a month or so away from NBA teams really starting to pay attention to where they're seated. I'd be interested if we could give the Lakers truth serum who they would prefer to play in the first round if they make it into the playoffs, which I think they still will, unless LeBron misses more time and Lonzo misses a ton of time. But I think I'd be interested to see who they would like to play. I think they match up well with Houston. They've played them really tough throughout the season. I don't think they match up very well with Denver. Denver has a ton of matchup. Nikola Jokic is the type of center that the Lakers have really struggled to guard this season. Nobody really matches up well with Golden State. But, you know, OKC, I think they match up fine with those guys. I think they would win that series. Utah, same kind of thing. And then as you get down into, you know, beyond Utah and into the whichever team will be in the 5 through 8 seeds, that's when then I'd take the Lakers against just about any team down there. So if the Lakers think that a trade would get them, you know, say home court advantage, then I think they make a trade then. But overall, I think it's going to be a pretty quiet trade deadline all around, just because there's so much that teams are positioning them for themselves for beyond this season. And there are so many teams that think that they have a chance at making the playoffs that the seller's market isn't going to be particularly fruitful. Next question here comes from Louse917. Would you rather have Brandon Ingram and Lonzo or Julius and D'Angelo Russell? Well, I think Julius and D'Angelo Russell fit this team right now because they're further along in their timelines. In terms of how I would rank those guys, I would probably put Lonzo at the top in terms of player I would most want on my team and player I think has the most upside moving forward. Then I would probably put D'Angelo Russell. I'd probably put Julius Randle, then D'Angelo Russell, then Brandon Ingram. And there's a bit of a gap between Russell and Ingram. That's how I'd rank those guys. Next question here comes from AV Vancouver. Basketball knowledge being passed in very compact and informative way. By the way, five doesn't mean I agree with everything, but it's a fun aspect. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate the kind words. And I don't. It'd be weird if we all agreed all the time. It would be boring, quite frankly. I like the back and forth with people who listen to the show. Last question from Short Leash. It's titled Short Leash from JR61194. I was really impressed with Luke, how quickly he pulled some of the guys in the OKC game, Kuzma, JaVale, etc. Wish he would do this more often, and maybe now he will. I don't know if you guys noticed, but KCP found the bench real quick after he took that shot last night. He was out of there. So I do think Luke is reaching a point where he's more comfortable sending messages that way with minutes. And really, that's the only way a coach can send a message that really hits home for players is with minutes. So I think this is a little bit of growth that we've seen from Luke Walton just in terms of comfort with players to be able to do that. Like, he's never going to do that with LeBron James, but he did it with KCP last night. I have seen him do it with Lance Stephenson. I've seen him do it with the young guys. So long as he's consistent beyond LeBron on these things, I think that it makes the Lakers a better team. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in and sending your questions. As always, if you guys want something guaranteed to make its way to the show, leave your question in the form of a 5-star review. We will be back again tomorrow with a fun guest. I actually have a guest lined up for tomorrow. I'm not going to say who it is because I don't want to ruin. It's just awkward. This is awkward. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Have a great rest of your day and make somebody else's.